Welcome to the keynote stage. So my name is Mark Walsh. I'm the founder of this conference and part of the leadership team with Daniela and Manel. We have got quite a feast, quite a treat in store for you. The main stage doesn't have all the top names on. Some of them are spread out for various logistical reasons, but there are some awesome presenters on this stage. This stage is also sponsored by Alain Stefani. When we first had the idea of getting sponsors, I basically said, I won't take anyone as a sponsor unless I love what they do, because otherwise it doesn't have any integrity for me. I didn't know who Alain Stefani was, but I met her in Berlin. Someone said, oh, she's an intimacy teacher, she's an ex-sex worker, best-selling author in Germany. And I said, okay, well, I'll meet her. And I met her. And as soon as I met her, I felt at ease. I felt like, wow, this is a person who's playful, but also a deep listener. This is a woman who's a real leader. Since I've seen her work with people in very, you know, around trauma, around intimacy, around very difficult areas, men and women, I've come to regard her as a friend, actually. Like, I love her. So go to her website and check it out. It's Alain, I-L-A-N, Stefani, S-T-E-P-H-A-N for November, I. AlainStefani.com. There's an offer there called Love and Rage, which is as juicy as it sounds. You'll also find links in the descriptions for the videos below.
With that, let me introduce Gil Hedley, who is our presenter today. Gil is the originator of integral anatomy. He has been teaching integral anatomy via dissection labs, keynote events, and lecture tours for the past 25 years. And from that, he has created an approach to anatomy coherent with the holistic body philosophies of body explorers from various treatment modalities, as well as teachers from yoga, Pilates, and the fitness industries. I just got in touch with Gil shortly, and I'm really, really curious on what he's bringing to us tonight. The name of this talk today is The Heart of the Matter. Gil, it's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you for having me. And I'm excited to talk with you and experience with you one of my favorite subjects. Is it my favorite subject?
No,
I have so many favorite subjects. We shouldn't play favorites with the body. But I'm going to start with a poem because I like poems. It's a heart poem. Actually, the picture, you can't really see the picture. The little picture there. There's a tree in winter. And I am stark naked, embracing the tree. It was supposed to be a tree hugging a tree. That was really cold. Like intertwining limbs of lovers exploring one another, the tendrils of the human heart wrap and wind, embracing every nook and hidden place of the beloved, drawing to its love the breath and light of life, cell by blessed cell. Those tendrils, their pulsing caresses are the gentlest hands stroking skin, the softest lips kissing tenderly wherever they will. The heart, its resonant voice with constancy speaks the truth throughout this land of quaking form like a prophet, inciting passion for what we bear within us. Yield, then, yield to this one love. Be carried away. The heart to which you bow and bend is your own. So We're going to play with our hearts today. They are playful critters. And in this moment, I'd like to just invite you to a state shift in case you haven't gotten there yet. And the state shift is to a state of appreciation, because to my mind, appreciation is the kind of the watchword of the heart. And when we go into states of love and appreciation, we actually shift our vibe and allow the heart to step forward as the preeminent oscillator of our form, of our embodied being. So just breathe out with me for a minute. Enjoy the free in-breath as it comes. And breathe out again. Take the free rebound as it comes. And one more time. And there you go. So from here, we all love and appreciate something. Pets, family, friends, partners, kids. And I want you to conjure something in your life. A plant in your, I love Daisy, for instance. I can't not love, everyone who knows me around here knows I have this thing for this plant, but that's why she's here. But I'm gonna just invite you for a moment, just picture in your mind your love. Identify that and allow yourself the feeling of love and appreciation for that which you're identifying at the moment. Might be you, that's okay. Let something bring a smile to your face that you love and appreciate. So when we place our attention in this way, on our love, on our appreciation, there's a certain kind of breathing change that happens, and a change in your heart rate, actually, that kind of flows into the room and into the space around you. And it's the best place in my mind for beginning any moment of learning as well. So I start every course that I teach with a moment of appreciation, because we really don't know what we're going to discover or learn with our friends in a classroom or in a learning opportunity. So if you start with appreciation, it's like a way of saying, heart, please come forward and lead this moment. Because if I just run from here, it'll produce completely different content. So I like to talk about the whole heart, right? I was talking in the poem about the tendrils, right? Wrapping and winding, embracing every nook and cranny of the form. Well, our heart does. And many of us, if you've studied anatomy or looked in a book or something, you looked up the heart because you think it's cool, it'll show this kind of little ball, right? This little cut off thing. A heart without its arms or legs, or without its head or its belly, without its sex, just a ball, like a, and to my mind, that's not the heart. The heart that I know is the whole heart. And the whole heart, it has a texture, right, that reaches through your whole body. I dissect by textures. And so there's really no place that I've found in the course of the blood's pathway through our body that leads me to think I should cut it here. That makes sense. Because if you follow the continuity of the whole heart, you'll find yourself going from the heart center. That's what I call this bit in the middle. The heart center. You'll go from the heart center and you'll travel out from that place and find yourself continuously traveling along pathways into your legs and into your arms and up through nooks and crannies in your head, little bony, crazy, wiggly pathways into your brain, like goes in there. And it's like this. It's like there's this heart reaching into your skull and embracing and massaging your brain. Ooh, can you feel it? It's going down into your pants. Right? The whole heart is going down into your pants, and it's busy there. It's a lively place. I'm sitting on my heart's butt right now and wiggling my heart's toes. So this is what I mean when I say it's like a whole body organ. And to invite you from an integral anatomy perspective, one that follows textures and continuities and relationships, to consider your heart to be this expansive presence that's actually not shaped like a little ball or even like this, right? You kind of tip it sideways, you can sort of see that a little bit, but not this, but rather this is the shape of the heart, the human heart, right? And when we look at one another, right, we're witnessing a heart in motion, a heart expressing, sometimes a heart hiding, right? But a heart nonetheless, because within one or two cells of every cell in your body is your heart pulsing and passing. So think about that. And I have reached into human bodies and held hearts in my hand many, many times, and always chokes me up. Can't not get choked up holding another human's heart in your hand, but it's not necessary to do it that way, because if we do then recognize the whole heart, I held the heart center, right? We hold the whole heart when we hug each other. We hold the whole heart, right? When we embrace. So, and what's its quality? What's its texture that I felt is fluid, right? So this is a fluid organ. It's jiggly. And because what is it if not a pathway, right, for the life, right, for the life moving, the blood. We call it blood, but I think life is a good word for that juice, that juicy juice. So we have this fluid pathway, the whole heart, and it's like a riverbed, but a dynamic one. Now, when we look at the streams and pathways in our world, and we see their meanders and their movement, this whole pattern is reiterated in our form, right? We, persons of the earth that we are, have coursing through us river and pathways, undulating, right? Meandering, turning about on themselves. And if you've noticed, if you've ever been at a stream and seen its fluid moving, that water moving, that blood of the earth moving, no pumping station necessary. There's no pump there, right? Somehow, on this nifty spinning planet, the blood is flowing without any need to be pushed along. It makes it quite around from the tops of mountains down to the rivers out of springs bubbling up and pouring forth, and makes its way to the sea without any force necessary, except the fact that we are on a spinning planet hurtling round the sun, which itself with us is flying through space in a giant crazy ass spiral, right? And do you think that we're immune as persons of the earth to the impact of that movement within us? You might think it, but I'm gonna try and tell you otherwise, right? That we're actually enjoying the same freedom of movement we are offered in our bodies, the pleasure of life flowing through us. So when I learned, I don't know, 25 years ago that Rudolf Steiner had written an article called "The Heart is Not a Pump," I was frantic. I was like, what? You know, if it's not a pump, because that's what every medical textbook portrays it as, that's the model. The model of the heart is a pump. We're a machine and the heart is the pump. The blood vessels are pipes and the heart is pushing the blood through there like a good busy machine. I didn't read the article, "The Heart is Not a Pump" by Rudolf Steiner. I was too flabbergasted to go past that one phrase, that sentence. And instead, I've spent 26 years going through bodies trying to determine, if not that, then what? And I think I figured it out to my pleasant satisfaction. And maybe you'll enjoy considering with me that if not a pump, perhaps the heart is the place where our blood refreshes its movement, right? The place where our blood refreshes its movement so that it's this busy place where the movement of life is refreshed and spun. It's just like a pitcher throws a ball and puts a little spin on it, right? And it's like, woo, and it goes faster, right? Literally. So the blood's flow is, it's not pushed, it's turned and accelerated. It's mixed also. Within that heart center are convoluted surfaces that actually turbinate it, like going over the stones in a stream. And it mixes the oxygen in, right? And churns the nutrients, the breath, the prana for you yoga folks. I'm not a yoga person, but I listen to them. And in this place, the blood, well, the heart shapes, really wrings it out, puts the spin on it, laminates the differently weighted constituents of the blood into sleeves, which are multiple things. It's also, this is crazy, but it's true. If you put a camera inside of the aorta, the arch, the aortic arch coming from this heart center, you'll see rifling on the walls in the living body, rifling. So rifling is like indentations that are turned, just like in a musket was the old way of moving a projectile, and it was a smooth barrel. Then they invented the rifle. They put spin, they carved a groove inside of the pipe. And then when the projectile is fired, it spins more and spins faster and more directly. The exact thing is happening in your body. The rifle is a mere lousy imitation. If they had bent it, the whole world would be better. Right? And it's like, boom, and it would just, yeah. And then we'd beat our swords into plowshares. So within our bodies then, this high velocity spin is put onto the blood, and the vasculature is mobile, right? And it responds. It allows that crazy movement to happen through it without resistance, actually. It's more of a sucking than a pushing that's happening in our body, because we have these itty bitty little capillaries at the end of the, at the periphery, right? We have 60,000 miles, linear miles, if you stretch them out, and nothing is linear in this form, but if you did, you'd have 60,000 miles of pathways for your blood. Do you think this little soft fluid center is a machine pushing a fluid through 60,000 miles of increasingly tiny diameter pipes? You'd need a pump the size of, like, well, a heart lung machine, and in that surgery, open heart surgery, they'll bring in the heart lung machine, and it's like this big, right? And it's powered by a motor, right, to pump your blood. So think of it this way. The spin is placed upon the blood, and it's sucked to the end. And then we have this low pressure zone, the thorax, the chest, this low pressure zone, and the lazy blood making its way through those tiny capillaries and back to the heart center is being sucked back from the higher pressure zones of the periphery into the low pressure heart center. So on and on. This is nice. This doesn't take so much work. So I have a hero. His name is Victor Schauberger. Victor Schauberger was an Austrian naturalist. He did most of his work in the early part of the 20th century. So 1920s, 1930s, he was doing his thing. He lived in the Austrian forests and studied the principles of fluid motion. And upon reading about Victor Schauberger's discoveries and reflections on fluid motion, I couldn't help but think that he had also discovered secrets of the heart. One of his inventions was a conical pipe, because he thought there's too much friction in pipes. It's a very Euclidean notion that pipes should be straight, right? And you can do the math on pipes. Pipe this big has X much friction. You reduce the pipe this much, friction increases a great deal. Smaller pipe, higher friction, to the point where you can only imagine the degree of friction that would be in the human blood system if it were a set of pipes and a pump, but it's not. So he invented pipes shaped like ram's horns, which were rifled on the inside. And then he brought them to the local university, and they were very competent hydrologists and engineers there. And they were angry at him for basically undoing all of the math that they had generated about pipe diameters and fluid motion, because they were able to measure negative pressure inside of the pipes that he gave them. Negative pressure, meaning it was a vacuum rather than friction. The shape of the ram's horn rifled pipe actually pulled the fluid through itself without a pump. And Gerald Pollack from University of Washington here in the United States has shown similar phenomenon of capillary action where you just put capillary tubes into a fluid medium and then you measure the fluid going through it because the fluid crawls through the pipes, right? Because of the properties, the gel properties of water in relationship to surfaces causes it to move. We're just on a planet where stuff moves, folks. There's just no getting around it. I say all of this to kind of cure us of the notion of the heart being a pump and welcome the notion that within us there is a living movement, right? That we can embody that living movement differently than we might imagine the hard work of a heart moving fluids through a body, right? I will say that in disease or pathology, that the heart can be reduced to a pump. A failing heart has become a pump. How would that happen? Well, sometimes we resist. So, can anyone relate to that? The room has fallen into a... I'm going to come back to this in a second. So I'll give you an example on our planet. We have all these streams and rivers, and good luck finding one that hasn't been dammed, right? Or a canal put on it somewhere along the line, or something like that. This incredible movement of life doesn't like being contained very much, okay? Water is like a kid in a car seat, or worse, a school chair, which you're all sitting in. So it just... It's like, I don't want to be here. I want to sit down. I don't want to stay still. And we consider it discipline when we can just be like listening for hours to a lecture. Similarly, the fluids on our planet don't like being bound or placed in a stricture. How do we do that? Well, Hoover Dam, right? Take the Hoover Dam, for instance. Hoover Dam is a big dam in front of a big river, and they stopped the river and created an enormous lake behind it to store water and generate power. The water is still on the same planet. It's not impressed by your dam. And so the engineers who built that knew that if they frustrated that river by blocking its pathway, that several things would happen. One, you would mess up the sediment carrying capacity of the vortex. So every river is a vortex just like the blood within us moving. So that vortex is the carrying capacity that enables sediment to travel down the river, minerals, etc., that enables our nutrients and oxygen, right, to make it through our body. So that vortex is not unimportant. It's the very property whereby the nourishment and energy is carried to the extent of our form. And similarly on the earth, that vortex is the scouring and carrying capacity, right? So if you stop the river, it drops its sediment. And if you know how much sediment is being carried by that river, you can actually do the math and calculate how long it will take for that lake to fill up with sediment until the dirt is at the top of the dam and it's no longer a lake. And the water is like, ah, ha, 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 and it flows around the dam. Or a canal. Lived on a property in New Jersey with a stream, and the house was here, and the stream went around the house. every once in a while, the stream went through the house, okay, and around the other side of the house, and because it was a watery place. And what would we do? Oh no, a natural disaster. This is what happens when you park your house on a meander of a river, right? So we built walls, stone walls, to control that flow and make it go around the house rather than through the house. There were walls, there were giant boulders. I worked for a long time fixing the walls because they were always falling down because the river was unimpressed by the stone walls. And we do the same inside of our body. So our energy of control, right? Our white knuckle driving through life. I'm going to get there. I'm late for work. Oh my God. Oh, the red light. Right? And we do this. And you can do that at a low grade perpetually. Like not. And what this does, this hypertensive mood actually stiffens your blood vessels. They're muscles. They're like tight muscles under those conditions. Hypertensive vasculature. I call it canalizing your blood. You actually hold your body like a canal and force the blood to go through a certain way when it just wants to do this. It just wants to do this through every capillary. It just wants to dance and move and be the movement of life going through you. And then we're like, nope. I got to do it this way. It's going to happen this way. I know I can make it happen this way. Or whatever. And we do all this. These are emotional states over which we have more control than we think. And I don't mean control like, but just to say we come to an understanding of our emotions and we let that cycle through us too, rather than holding on to anger for years. We can, right? We could be like, I'm mad now. And then it's gone. And then you move on like a cat that like saw a mouse and chased it all over the house and didn't catch it. And it's like, huh. You know, so our resistance to the movement of life within us creates a conflict, right, between the flow, literally the flow of the universe through space and the flow of the universe in our body, the movement of life within us and our resistance to it. And our resistance to it has the same result as what happens to the dam or the canal. Right, when you lock in the stream, you suddenly there's friction because normally a stream is just carving its own path. Blood has carved its own path in our bodies. Right, the vessels form around the blood, not the other way around. So similarly, the path of a river is the fluid's path. It's not the fluid's movement is not defined by the path. The path is defined by the fluid's movement. We've got it all backwards here. So when we canalize our blood or when we canalize the water on the planet, there's friction generated. And the water turning starts rubbing on that structure that's been made. And it does the same thing in our body, right? If you are hypertensive in your mood, state of mind, belief system, whatever, the way you move through space, if you're hypertensive, then you have generated friction between the movement of life within you and your blood vessel walls. And they start to wear it down, just like they do a canal's walls. It starts to wear it down. And your body, homeostasis, life, you're promised to be here longer than your personality will let you, steps up to the plate and says, oh, okay, I'm going to produce more cholesterol in my liver. It's a mild antioxidant to address the oxidative stress of the emotional states. And I'm going to let that oxidized cholesterol pack into the fissures that are forming in the walls as the friction of the blood rubbing against it starts to destroy the vessel walls. So we have mechanical friction and we have chemical friction, right? Because the states of mind that generate hypertensive states are moving towards acid rather than the alkaline nature of the blood. It doesn't turn acid. It just moves in that direction enough to become more caustic to the vessel walls, right, in a way that further dissolves them, right, so that the vessel walls start smooth muscle proliferation, pouring forth cells to try and smooth out that pathway and allow it be what it's meant to be. And if all that fails, you will literally generate a hard shell instead of a supple, soft vessel. We'll literally create canals in our body. It's like, if that's the state of blood that you're going to resist, then you're gonna create literally like eggshells inside of your body. It's crackly. I've heard it snap. So it doesn't have to be that way, right? Life's moving. We can go with it. I mean, it sounds cheesy, maybe, but it's true. There's physiological and anatomical and psychological and spiritual good reasons for chilling out a bit, right? So years ago, my friend Anne-Marie Duchesne, who took my class many times, said, "Gil, how does the heart move? Show me." She was a dancer. She was actually one of the Cirque du Soleil choreographers in its incipient state back in Montreal many, many years ago. And so I tried to figure it out with my body. Maybe some of you will join me. If not here, then elsewhere. But look. So up here, we got a head, and down here, we got the rest of us. And the venous blood comes back, right? Comes here, comes to the center. Right, bring it to the center. What does it do when it gets here? I told you, it's the spinner. It's like a crazy straw. So we come to our right atrium, and we're going to go down into that right ventricle. And then we've got to go where? Out to the lungs. Watch out, Daisy. This is going to be busy. So from the right atrium out to the lungs. And then we come back. All right, we got to get back in there. We got to go to the left atrium, down into the left ventricle, right? And then what does it do? It goes up over the aortic arch, behind the atrium, over the hill, and then it branches back out. That's the spin, right? You got it? Let's do it. It's different every time. All day long, 100,000 times a day, 100,000 times a day. We don't even know it. We don't think about it. In fact, we think about everything else, but we don't think about that. We don't have to think about it. That's the beauty of it. This is a gift. This is the universe's gift to you. Life moving within you. Ah, it's good stuff. When I sit back down, that was just fun, Tai Chi heart movement dance. But I think there's another way to get in here. So sit yourself down real gently after your huffy puffy heart dance adventure. And we're gonna connect to it in a slightly different way. If you get on your sits bones, it's hard in those funny chairs, or on your couch, it's best if you're kind of like on something a little firm. And know that within your chest is a dance of life taking place. A gift, a movement within you. And we're accustomed to being sort of musculoskeletally directive. We do things, we get an idea and we go and do it. But it's more rare perhaps that we let our heart move us, right? And if you find that sort of still point and you let your spine be kind of long and soft and your head like a little bobble doll on the top, you might feel your heart moving you. This is and you might even feel your pulse. You could literally put your hand on a pulse, do it one hand at a time. And find that thrumming, maybe in your neck. You can put your hands on your tummy and you'll feel the powerful aorta throbbing there. Because this pathway, this life path moving within you, reaching cell by blessed cell through you, is pulsing not only in the center of your chest or belly, but in the palms of your hands. I can feel my heart in the palms of my hands kind of throbbing. In the soles of my feet. And allowing yourself to appreciate and settle into the heart moving within you is a way to shift your state. And don't think you can't act from here, because you can. You can act from here, and in fact, you'll score better on a test. It's been demonstrated that your visual acumen will be sharper. Your perceptive capacity when your heart is leading you is heightened, not diminished. Many people think, oh, go with your heart, mushy gushy. The heart's electromagnetic oscillations are 5,000 times stronger than the brain's. They move out from between our ribs, right? The sonic and percussive and movement waves of the heart, they bump up against the ribs and reflect back to itself. The heart knows itself very well, but also reaches out always into the space around us, palpating, feeling with its tendrils, creating wave interference patterns with the surrounding people, creating a fabric of our environment, the texture of which we recognize immediately and change our disposition in relationship to. The heart is a feeling and relational leader. And when we offer it a leadership, the leadership role to which it is destined, then we're living in a world where all the rifles are pointed down. And the agent of life and the movement is is supported rather than held against. And the intelligence of the heart can then speak in our world in a way that has the potential to make this a different planet. One of the most exciting things about this conference for me was the idea that 500,000 people with an interest in embodiment could literally differently embody the world if the invitation to step in and move with is made and accepted. What's up, folks?
I have some questions for you.
Great.
Great. You remember to repeat them, okay?
I'll repeat them as best as I can. If they're small questions, I'll repeat them. And if they're long questions, I'll just ask them to be repeated to me.
Okay. In craniosacral, we learn the heart is a connected part of the being. That is in contact with every cell of the body, but also energetically in contact with the surroundings outside the body. Could you recognize this in any way on your anatomy table with your years of expertise and your vision?
Our interconnectivity.
Question.
Oh, sorry.
Is the heart outside the body?
Yeah, the question is that can I tell in the lab maybe what's the stories told in a craniosacral class about the heart's reach beyond the body? I'm going to say yes and no. The heart on my table, sadly, is no longer moving. And these measurements of the heart's true reach beyond the body are done with lab equipment. You know, you can literally measure the heart at a distance. The electromagnetic waves propagate at a considerable distance from the heart. We're talking guaranteed 12 feet, but the problem is that the equipment, literally, we can't design equipment sensitive enough to pick up the reality. It's just that we get past the line on the graph and it can't read it anymore, right? So the heart's preeminence in the space around us can be measured. I don't have that equipment. I just read about it. What I do see in the human body, on the table, even in a cadaver, is total connection. Anything that I do there is an imposition upon the form with my scalpel, with my ideas, that takes it out of its reality and turns it into bits. Because the reality is its continuity. And the profundity of that for me, after all these years in the lab, is to become suspicious of the spaces between us. Because I, at first, didn't notice the connections inside the body, which I now witness to be complete and continuous. But in my parsing out of the world, I took it apart into parts and just saw the parts and didn't see the connection. It took years of taking things apart to start to pay attention to the connection rather than the end product of destroying, of separation. Once I finally clued into the continuity, then I started wondering, am I perhaps missing something here too? Is there a subtle relationship that escapes me? Well, it's frankly not that subtle, right? The textures between us are profoundly palpable. We feel them in our heart. We can't miss them unless we refuse them, unless we hold ourselves against the connections between us. We have to hold ourselves against the connections between us to miss them. We have to separate on purpose to defeat, and we don't really accomplish it. It just seems that way, to defeat the connection.
Callum wonders, can you talk about the heart's role in the nervous system?
Oh, Callum. That's so yummy. Callum wants to know about the nervous system bit with the heart. Sorry, this is how I interpret questions. It might have been a different question altogether. So I know Stephen Porges is part of this conference, and he's like the vagus nerve guy, I think. Is that right? Vagus nerve guy. Anyway, thanks, Stephen, for all your cool vagus nerve stuff. The vagus nerve, that wanderer, the wandering nerve, like the wandering life blood, is deeply situated in and around the heart. And the direction, the majority of the fibers are going to the head, not from the head. 85% of the vagus nerve fibers connected to the heart are directing the brain, because that the heart, being the leader, needs to speak to its chief lieutenant, the brain. Okay? And it communicates in terms of the nervous system. It communicates in so many ways, right? Through sound, through movement, through electromagnetic effluence, but also importantly through the nervous system via the vagus nerve to the brain to read in, to read the brain in on all that the heart knows about our environment, both external and internal. So all that palpating that the heart is doing, feeling its way through space, is being communicated to the brain via the vagus nerve. And then the brain, second in charge, right? If you want to think hierarchically, which I'd rather not, but I'm just trying to take the brain out of this leadership role because it futzes everything up. It's a good brain. I love my brain. But when I allow my brain to be directed through that nervy relationship of the vagus nerve, rather than ignoring and suppressing all the information, allow that informing to happen, I make different decisions. My cognitive abilities express in a completely different way. You don't abandon them. This is a team effort. It's really the age of Aquarius, and it's a communitarian environment, this human body. It's not a Piscean down the chain of command kind of thing like we see all over the planet. Your body doesn't work that way. We project that onto our body. Your body is actually communitarian and intercommunicative in every conceivable way beyond our mind's ability to perceive. So yeah, the heart, dry weight, 25% nerve tissue, directing the brain.
A couple minutes. For questions. What's the healthiest thing we can do to help our hearts? Cynthia wants to know.
The healthiest thing we can do to connect our hearts, Cynthia asks. Number one, give it a little time like we have today. Like, sit down for a minute. Sit down and shut up. and just feel. Let yourself feel your heart. It might be in pain. Let yourself feel that. Cry until it's free of that, right? Let yourself feel it. Feel stuff. Yeah.
Caitlin asks, if the heart is the place where life is refreshed, might we consider heart rate as an act of compassion in response to the expressed needs of other brain centers in the body requiring an altered state of refreshment? In other words, the pump action, chemical or other changes, is initiated outside the heart center, making the heart not a pump, but a conduit.
My brain, very small. That sounded beautiful.
And I'll just post it.
Yeah, let's post it and say, yeah.
Maya Ward wants to know, she takes tryptin medication to constrict blood vessels for migraines. It's given her life. She's grateful, but are there risks?
If you already have, I share your problem. If you already have heart problems, these medications can exacerbate them. So you want to be super cautious. If you already have known heart conditions before you're taking medications that do constrict vessels in the brain, I took those medications today. And I've been working with them for many years. I'm also a headache guy. So I empathize with you completely. And also, you know, we're going to use up these bodies on this planet one way or another. And the advantages that you gain from some medications, despite their risks, may outweigh them. I take them because I can be here with you today. So thank God for some medications. And also, we're not going to be here forever, but our hearts will live on. This is just one big heart. So be careful. See your doctor. I'm not a doctor.
I think we should probably toss it back to Daniela for the final wrap-up. Do you have any last words you want to say, everybody?
I literally could have spoken for another 4 hours on the heart. I made some notes. I put them on the floor here. I didn't get past the first phrase. And so I was winging it from my heart to yours. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Gil. Maybe there are people who want to hear the other 4 hours and want to find out more about you. So where can people find more about you?
GilHedley.com.
Very good. My assistant just put it into the chat. So find Gil on his website. You can also see it on the portal. If you'd like to continue the discussion with other participants, please try out our coffee breaks. So a big part of learning is reflection and discussion to put it into your own words. So that's really helpful. It also creates connections. You can also go to our Facebook group, which is moderately sympathetic and not too much nasty things going on, thanks to our
moderately sympathetic.
And last but not least, the conference is about to end. So there is a huge chance that you missed already a lot of great things. Why don't you give yourself a little bit of time and dig through all the recordings and all the great sessions in your own time and space and purchase the recording? You don't just help us with that. You also help yourself, because the recordings will be double that expensive from Monday when the conference ends. And you make this event actually happening, because it's not cheap to set it up. It is free to attend, but it's not free to set up. So help us to get our investment back. That's really, really gives us a little bit of night sleep. So before I end the session, I want to hand back the mic to Gil for one thing, what you would like people to take away in one sentence, which we can put in the book after the conference.
We can yield to the life within us.
Beautiful. You are my poet of anatomy now after this session. Thank you so much, Gil. It was a pleasure. Definitely will look you up. And thanks for everyone who joined.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.